Yes, only three questions remain.
To Win, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 100 Orlando police officers held a silent vigil outside of City Hall on Monday as the mayor held a workshop to discuss their salaries inside. Fraternal Order of Police Labor Committee Chairman Sam Hoffman says that the workshop held by Mayor John Dyer was in violation of labor laws, as only council members were allowed to speak. The two sides have been involved in a dispute over pay raises since July of 2004. A statement by the mayor said the primary reason pay raises weren't offered was because the city had a $5 million deficit. The police then hired an accounting firm to examine the city's financial statements. A day after the firm requested a copy of the city's annual report, Dyer issued a press release stating Orlando actually had a surplus of $8 million. Hoffman says the mayor is sending mixed messages.
Either you have a deficit or you have a surplus. You can't have both at the same time. So this information that the mayor has released recently is curious at best, and we continue with our investigation.
SEIU District 1199 in Wisconsin has successfully negotiated a contract with University of Wisconsin Hospitals that it believes could serve as a national model to alleviate some staffing and salary issues among nurses. SEIU says the contract eliminates mandatory overtime by 2006. Economic incentives include seniority-based across-the-board wage increases of 19% over 2 years. Kathy Anthony, an SEIU nurse at UW Hospitals in Madison, says nurses are also assured of a voice in patient care in this groundbreaking contract.
I find it very exciting, the new attitude toward nurses' input in decision-making, hospital-wide, unit-wide. It's, to me, exciting, and I think that it will go a long way in retaining nurses and overcoming the shortage of nurses.
Better staffing levels and more time with patients are two things often cited by nurses as key to keeping them in health care. The SEIU and Anthony believe this contract at University of Wisconsin Hospitals achieves gains in those areas.
Studies have shown that attractive salaries bring nurses in, but what retains nurses is that you recognize their expertise, you hear their voice when it comes to patient care decisions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. U.S. workers' hourly wages continue to decline when adjusted for inflation, and economists see no sign of a turnaround. The average growth for wages fell below 3% during the period between September 2003 and September 2004. Pay grew at 2.4%, the lowest increase on record. Economists say that part of the blame lies with soaring health benefit expenses for employers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
We know that global trade is totally out of whack for our country. We were promised that if we accepted the corporate ideology of global free trade, millions of new good-paying middle-class jobs would be created here to make all of those products that they said the USA would soon be exporting to places like China, thanks to the glorious magic of globalization. But it turned out to be globaloney. Rather than creating manufacturing jobs for workers here, the Walmarts and Nikes simply abandoned America, fleeing to places like China to make all those products. The corporate globalizers turned America from being a proud, strong manufacturing nation into a nation dependent on imports. Our global trade balance is an embarrassment. We now buy $500 billion a year more in goods from abroad than we sell in the world market. China alone pockets $18 billion a year from us, selling that much more to us than they buy from America. What most Americans don't know, however, is what China and other nations do with this excess cash that they're amassing from our trade imbalance. They've been using much of it to buy the U.S. government's bonds, putting our country deeply, perhaps dangerously, in debt to them. Indeed, the central banks of just four Asian nations, Japan, China, Taiwan, and South Korea, now hold roughly 40% of Washington's public debt. In effect, they've quietly become our world banker, giving them inordinate power over America's purse strings. On everything from the value of the American dollar to the spending policies of Congress, these four foreign banks are in a position to yank our strings, and they are. They're now demanding, for example, that Washington protect the value of their investments in U.S. bonds by cutting back on federal spending, cuts that would come from the education budget, Social Security benefits, and other spending that we Americans count on. This is Jim Hightower saying, when did we vote for this?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, well, get there, get to the microphone. Here I be. Tom Hartman here with you. Looking around for a last minute story. I don't know what happened. I was just marking this thing up. It was all about the...
What it was about
how Bush is putting together his budget for the next fiscal year. Going to cut back block grants for housing, going to cut back veterans benefit. They're going to see, this is the starve the beast strategy that the tax cuts began with. And these guys have just been right up front about this. I mean, it's just so amazing to me that so few Americans are paying attention to what really is going on with the cons in this country. Grover Norquist comes out and he says, we got to do the starve the beast policy. They tried it with Reagan. Reagan flinched. I mean, you know, Reagan cut taxes the first 2 years of his administration. And then for the next 6 years, every single year, had to raise taxes, as did George Herbert Walker Bush also, because they didn't want to create an economic disaster. Although they did anyway. This year, we're paying $160 billion in interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed so that in 1984... He could have an economy that looked halfway decent so he could get himself reelected. But nonetheless, the theory was that if you could drive the economy into the ditch badly enough by cutting taxes, that it would force a rollback of these socialist programs, that the socialism that is epidemic in America would go away, that it would be an opportunity to end socialism in America, to set aside things like Social Security and Medicare and, you know, help for the poor and, you know, whatever. I mean, just, you know, let's get rid of this stuff. Ain't going to have it. And this time they're doing it. And what's really interesting, I mean, it looks like it, you know, Bush is actually going to try and do it. And how much blowback is he going to get? I mean, already he's got a lot of very uncomfortable Republicans. He had to come out a couple days ago saying to Republicans in Congress that if they didn't get on board with him about privatizing Social Security, which, again, is all about dismantling Social Security and turning it into a program just like your auto insurance, where basically, you know, it's like you are forced by law to buy car insurance from a private corporation. So we are using the force of law, of federal law, or of state, actually. The federal law requires the states to require you to do it. Otherwise, the states can't get federal highway matching funds. And so the federal law requiring the states to require you and me to buy a profitable product from a for-profit company. The federal government subsidizing the auto insurance industry. They want to be doing the same thing with Social Security. Instead of having Social Security being run by the federal government at the cost of 1%, very nice, boring, you know, buying it at wholesale, right? Very nice, boring thing where you got these green eye shades, bureaucrats, people who work in Washington, D.C. for 30 years and they're out. And they make, you know, just a nice, modest, middle-class salary, and they handle billions of dollars, literally trillions of dollars. And they never steal any of it. There are no scandals. They're not having to pay hundreds of millions of dollars like all the big, you know, like, you know, Merrill Lynch recently. I mean, and others. I don't know if it was hundreds of millions, but, you know, all these companies are paying all these fines for this, that, and the other. No. No, they just make sure that every month you get your Social Security check. But no, the cons don't like that idea. And the reason why is it has to do with power. What people don't get is that this all has to do with power. Who owns and controls the wealth of this country? And in the minds of these guys, in the minds of these cons, they very much want the wealth of this country to be owned and controlled by a small ruling elite, a meritocracy, as it were. Now you go back to, you know, Russell Kirk's writings and other writings, historic conservative writings, William F. Buckley, Barry Goldwater, on and on. They're pretty upfront about it. You know, they're not altogether in favor, as Alexander Hamilton was, of a hereditary aristocracy, where somebody has power and wealth simply because they inherited, although they're not opposed to that. It's, in fact, you know, that's, they still see that as a powerful social stabilizer. That's why they want to do away with the inheritance tax. It was huge inheritance taxes here in the United States that caused there not to be any huge dynastic families until the 1890s. I mean, everybody remembers the Carnegies, the Mellons, the Rockefellers. Who do you remember before that? Nobody. George Washington left no dynasty. Thomas Jefferson left no dynasty. John Hancock, one of the wealthiest of the founders, left no dynasty. And the cons, you know, Rove has said he wants to take us back to the era of McKinley. McKinley? 1895? Take us right back to that. So anyhow, so what's happening is, this is going on. There is this concentrated effort, this class war that has been declared by the cons against the middle class of America, against working people in America, against organized labor and what it represents, which is the average working person. And now that the squeeze is on, now that the pressure is on, and this is exactly the way the cons want this thing played out. Now that the pressure is on, the victims are pointing the fingers at each other, going, "Oh, it's you!" Right? This is the classic blame the victim strategy. We have. I wrote this piece a couple days ago for CommonDreams.org. And, you know, about first they came for the terrorists, about laws of civil liberties in the United States. And here we go, oh, you poor, misguided, paranoid, un-American soul, writes Benji Watts from, from Lenoir, North Carolina. He says, what I would give to debate you on any stage in any city in this great country, can you please tell me one, just one single right Bush has taken from you? Benji, I'd be pleased to oblige you. Very simply. The Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. In the Patriot Act, there's this thing called sneak and peek. So that's one. How's that for a starting point? They can walk into your house when you're not there, in direct violation of the Fourth Amendment. Anyhow, he says, can you please tell me just one right Bush has taken from you? You can't. You and your lefty buddies are out of your friggin' minds. Keep at it, however. The more famous you and morons like Michael Moore gets, the more Americans will see Democrats for really what they really are. Blame America first. That's your motto. Benji Watts, Lenoir, North Carolina. So I sent him back an email saying, Benji, number here, 866-889-8894. Give me a call. We can talk on the air. But what I what his email is symptomatic of, and I get these things all the time. You know, Benji's was actually fairly reasonable. I mean, it's very often they're death threats, you know. But what this is symptomatic of is this whole idea of blame the victim. This is the divide and conquer strategy that the cons have been running on us. There is a radio station in Philadelphia that is getting a lot of flack right now. Alternate's got this whole thing up. People are, like, contacting the FCC. You know, everybody's all upset about this. You know, WUSL in Philadelphia has a guy on the air. His name is, he calls himself Star. He's an African-American guy. He's, according to this blogger, Sepia Munity, he has some problems with women's Jews and people who die in plane crashes and, of course, Indians, although his show is apparently growing. And he did a prank call on the air where they want us to be looking. It's like the magic trick where the guy is doing the actual trick with his left hand, but his right hand is waving around in the air, so you'll watch it. Right. This is Star here.
This is Stina. How may I help you?
Hi, Stina, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, I called and I just got hung up on. I'm calling from America about the quick beads for my daughter's hair.
Quick beads.
Okay. May I have your zip code, please?
10274.
10274?
Yes, get it right. Now, are you in India? Because I just spoke to someone in India who hung up on me.
Now, this is where it gets in. See, this is the whole thing about, it's outsourcing. Now, whose fault is the outsourcing?
Okay, I am from India, ma'am.
Okay, so my call is being outsourced to India.
That's right.
In regards to my 6-year-old white American daughter who wants to get the quick beads like Serena and Venus Williams.
Yeah, I'll definitely place an order for that. I'm glad you called today for the quick bead of Cornell. To ensure proper handling.
Ma'am, I don't know what the hell you're saying. Hang on a second. I'm just trying to get something straight here.
And then he starts getting really abusive. And this is where, this is the theater value, I suppose, of it on
the
radio.
The quick bees like Venus and Serena Williams that they're advertising for the white kids on television. This call has been outsourced to India?
That's right.
Well, ma'am, what the F would you know about an American white girl's hair? And quick beads.
And then he goes on into a rant and starts calling her a dirty rat eater and all this stuff. And I'm not going to play that part of it. It's pretty gross, frankly. And then it wraps up, of course.
Just to inform you, ma'am, you're a national
test. Whoops, hang on.
Get off the line, bitch.
That's how he wraps it up. And they close out.
Well, they look well out here.
It's Star and Buck Wild on Philly's number one station, Power 99 FM.
Put that in for... The requirements of the Millennium Copyright Act that we identify the source of some. There you go. That's where it came from. Anyhow, the point is that, you know, the Greeks, Aristotle wrote a whole piece, which I quote in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, about how we should treat our slaves, about slaves as household tools. He called them tools. And there were rules about treating slaves. The Romans had rules about treating slaves. This was the whole thing. People talking in the Bible where Jesus says, you know, turn the other cheek. Well, it turns out you could slap a slave with your left hand, but you couldn't, I'm sorry, with your right hand, but you couldn't slap a slave with your left hand. Why? Because the left hand was considered unclean. It's what people used to wipe themselves with before toilet paper. And so if a slave was slapped by somebody with their right hand, and you turned the other cheek and said, now slap me with your other hand, you would be inviting them to break the law, to commit a crime, and they would end up, the slaveholder would end up in jail. I mean, this is very subversive stuff. Right? There used to be rules. The Romans had rules about how to treat your slaves. You could take their coat during the day and hold it while they worked so that they had to come back at night to sleep in it. You couldn't take the toga, the cloak underneath it. You couldn't take it because then they'd be naked. It was a crime. You could lose your Roman citizenship. So what does he say? If somebody takes your coat, give them your cloak also, right? What is it going to do? It's going to put the slaveholder in jail. We used to understand how to deal with our slaves. This is the issue of our day, my friends. 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider the Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, some people think that unions are too strong. Union leaders should go back where they belong. But I wish that they could see a little more poverty and they might start to sing a different song.
Amen, brother. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Here's my point. I have, frankly, no problem with the tone or the language in Star's piece on Power 99. Here's this guy. He's doing his rant. He's doing his gig. It's good theater. It's good radio. It's not the kind that I like, frankly. I wouldn't listen to it. But, you know, if somebody's going to be a shock jock, they're going to be a shock jock. The point is that by calling somebody in India and calling her a rat eater and a bitch and all this, this is where they want your attention focused. They want you and me to believe that the enemy is India, that the enemy are the Indians, or in some cases, and there's actually even a lot of liberals out there who are saying this, that the enemy are the American corporations who are outsourcing our jobs. And there's just a whole bunch of people who absolutely believe that's the case. And I'm here to tell you, the American corporations are simply playing by the rules, and the people in India are just trying to make a living. And I have no problem with either one. What we need to be doing is changing the rules. What we are seeing right now in America is the exact and predictable consequence of conservative economic policies that started in the 1980s under Ronald Reagan, continued under George Herbert Walker Bush, continued to a large extent, particularly with international trade policies, and in fact, were dramatically expanded under Bill Clinton. And now the doors are being kicked open by George W. Bush. You know, the outsourcing is good for you guy. Our problem, as Bernie Sanders would say, is political. The problem is not some poor woman in India who's just answering the phone. I'm sorry, that is not the problem.
Now, if you continue to speak this language, I need to disconnect the call.
Listen to me, you dirty rat eater.
There you go. No, that's not the problem. She's not the problem. Yeah, he's doing radio theater. But the cons want you and I to think that it's the Indians who are the... No, sorry. Here, today's Wall Street Journal. China's reserves of foreign money surged last year. China's foreign exchange reserves jumped more than $200 billion in 2004 to reach $609.9 billion at year's end. Last year's huge increase was the biggest surge in China's reserves in any single year. Indeed, it was bigger than China's entire reserves until 2001. The gain of $206.7 billion. China's foreign reserves constitute the second largest such stash in the world behind Japan's. Yesterday, China's Ministry of Commerce reported exports rose 35.4% to $593.36 billion in 2004. This is not about China being bad. It's not about Walmart being bad. It's not about India being bad. It's not about the woman who answers the phone in India being bad. It's about our politicians rigging the game so the only winners are multinational corporations with no loyalty to any nation who keep shoveling the money into the pockets of said aforementioned politicians, particularly of the conservative variety. And at the same time that they are strip mining the world for labor and ripping out the industrial heart of America, they are also on a full-blown campaign to take away our rights to point it out, to speak out about it, to protest. You try getting within 100 yards of a Bush rally on public property, and you will get escorted to a free speech zone at the point of a gun where you will stand behind some barbed wire, my friend. That is not the America that I grew up in. But it's the America we have right now. This is how quickly it has changed. We are facing one of those Germany 1934 moments. We are that close. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire here.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 100 Orlando police officers held a silent vigil outside of City Hall on Monday as the mayor held a workshop to discuss their salaries inside. Fraternal Order of Police Labor Committee Chairman Sam Hoffman says that the workshop held by Mayor John Dyer was in violation of labor laws, as only council members were allowed to speak. The two sides have been involved in a dispute over pay raises since July of 2004. A statement by the mayor said the primary reason pay raises weren't offered was because the city had a $5 million deficit. The police then hired an accounting firm to examine the city's financial statements. A day after the firm requested a copy of the city's annual report, Dyer issued a press release stating Orlando actually had a surplus of $8 million. Hoffman says the mayor is sending mixed messages.
Either you have a deficit or you have a surplus. You can't have both at the same time. So this information that the mayor has released recently is curious at best, and we continue with our investigation.
SEIU District 1199, Wisconsin, has successfully negotiated a contract with University of Wisconsin Hospitals that it believes could serve as a national model to alleviate some staffing and salary issues among nurses. SEIU says the contract eliminates mandatory overtime by 2006. Economic incentives include seniority-based across-the-board wage increases of 19% over 2 years. Kathy Anthony, an SEIU nurse at UW Hospitals in Madison, says nurses are also assured of a voice in patient care in this groundbreaking contract.
I find it very exciting, the new attitude toward nurses' input in decision-making, hospital-wide, unit-wide. It's, to me, exciting, and I think that it will go a long way in retaining nurses and overcoming the shortage of nurses.
Better staffing levels and more time with patients are two things often cited by nurses as key to keeping them in health care. The SEIU and Anthony believe this contract at University of Wisconsin Hospitals achieves gains in those areas.
Studies have shown that attractive salaries bring nurses in, but what retains nurses is that you recognize their expertise, you hear their voice when it comes to patient care decisions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. U.S. workers' hourly wages continue to decline when adjusted for inflation, and economists see no sign of a turnaround. The average growth for wages fell below 3% during the period between September 2003 and September 2004. Pay grew at 2.4%, the lowest increase on record. Economists say that part of the blame lies with soaring health benefit expenses for employers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearless. rigorously exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
No matter what you are.
And welcome back. You see, what I'm suggesting here is that there's a new slave-owning class emerging in the world. And a new slave class. Yeah, the Romans had a law about slaves, They knew if you push the slaves too far, they will revolt. And so there were people, revolutionaries among the Romans, not Romans, they were principally the people who were occupied by the Romans, for example, the Jews, who were you know, trying to stir things up, trying to stir up revolt. So the Romans had this rule so that, you know, because they didn't want to push the slaves too far. They had this rule that you could go, walk up to any slave anywhere, any person who was not a Roman citizen, anybody in an occupied territory, and force them to carry something for a mile, 1 mile. But if you did more than that, that was considered exploitation of the slaves or of the occupied people. So a revolutionary act would be if somebody says, hey, carry this for me a mile, and you carried it a second mile, that entire second mile, that person would be sweating blood. They would be so terrified that somebody might notice that they had a slave carry something that second mile, because they would lose their Roman citizenship. They would become a slave. They might go to prison. So if somebody forces you to carry something for a mile, carry it too. And overthrow the government. I mean, that's what it was about. Go back and read your history. So the Romans figured out how to treat their slaves. We have now in the world this new slaveholding class, and it's being brought about by this new economic order, the CEO class, the slaveholders, and then there's the slaves. And increasingly, the slaves aren't just this poor woman in India that Star here is picking on. They're Americans. Another story from the Wall Street Journal today. United Steelworkers to merge with Paper Chemical Union. Two of North America's largest industrial unions have agreed to merge and create an 850,000-member union, the largest dedicated to the manufacturing sector. Manufacturing has lost millions of jobs in recent years. Note Paul Glader and Chris Mayer in the Wall Street Journal. This is the latest and largest of several mergers among industrial unions in recent years. Why? Well, as the Wall Street Journal notes, between 2000 and 2003, that's during the years of George W. Bush, although, as I said, Bill Clinton, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Ronald Reagan share the credit for this. Between 2000 and 2003, manufacturing output dropped 6% in the U.S., and manufacturing employment fell by 2.6 million jobs, according to the Department of Commerce. So the unions are struggling. Why? Because the middle class that they represent is struggling. How do you feel about being a member of the new slave class? 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Tim in Illinois, what are your thoughts on all this?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Tim.
I have a couple of questions today for you about mass media, and the second is about labor and the cons.
Sure.
I had the pleasure yesterday of listening to David Mindich, the author of Tuned Out, Why Americans Under 40 Don't Follow the News. And his research shows that 45% of the 18 to 35 age group voted for George Bush. Now, to me, this is evidence of the large amount of cluelessness in that demographic.
Yeah, yeah, it's
largely
it's huge.
Due to the dominance of the right wing on TV.
Well, and on radio as well. I mean, I have three kids who are
absolutely.
In that age group.
Absolutely.
And
it shows the screaming need for a liberal TV news channel that would be the opposite of Fox News.
Yeah.
My question is, how difficult would it be for a group of wealthy investors, people like George Soros, for instance, to get a license for such a channel?
Well, it's not a matter of a license because, you know, you can put up a satellite and you can beam down. So you'd have to negotiate deals with each one of the individual cable providers. It would be a challenge, but it wouldn't be impossible. It certainly would not be impossible. There's new channels coming on all the time in cable.
It just seems to me like such a screaming need, and there really is a very large market for such a thing.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%, Tim. 2 years ago, a little more than 2 years ago, I wrote an op-ed piece for Common Dreams called Talking Back to Talk Radio, in which I pointed out that there was a market hole that you could drive a truck through in as much as there, you know, half of America had voted for Al Gore, more than half had voted for Al Gore in 2000. I wrote this in 2001, and nobody was providing talk radio for these folks. And two things happened as a result of my writing that. One is Shelley Drobny, who wrote a book about this called The Road to Air America that you can find on Amazon or in bookstores. In fact, we're going to get Shelley on the show one of these days. We've been corresponding with him. Shelley Drobny called me up and asked me if I'd come to Chicago and meet with him and talk with him. And he used my article as part of his original business plan for what is now known as Air America Radio. And he went out and in fact, in his book, he says he took my article and gave it to Al Franken, and that convinced Al that he should get into radio. Right? How ironic is that I'm now competing with him? But in any case, number one, that was the first thing that happened, was that it led to the creation of a liberal talk radio network, and you know, just pointing out the reality of it. And number two, I decided to put my money where my mouth was and started my own show. I started it on a local station here in Vermont, and then we went national with IE America Radio, and now we're nationally syndicated independently. But the reality is that it is happening in radio, and it's growing really rapidly. You see the success of folks like Ed Schultz, Randy Rhodes. There's some very talented people out there, Mike Malloy's show, that are just absolutely, you know, just doing it. And doing it well and making money. And I think in TV it could be done as well. And, you know, there's been this discussion about Al Gore financing this TV channel. They're gonna talk to kids. I hope they're going to talk, when they say kids, they're talking about that young demographic that you're talking about, and not, you know, 6 to 10-year-olds. Because there is, I absolutely agree, if somebody was to come out and do a Fox News on the left, you know, all 24-hour-day news channel on the left, they would make a fortune in America right now, talking to the American middle class about the very issues that I'm talking about.
Yeah, I totally agree, because the marketplace is there for it. And when the marketplace is there and there's money to be made, it happens.
Something will fill it. Yeah, I absolutely.
The oddity is, why has not it happened?
Well, I think it hasn't happened because up until this point, there's been this kind of broad belief that that the right is what works. I mean, you know, and because the right wingers have been willing to just absolutely throw money into this stuff. You know, I mean, this started in the 70s with Richard Mellon-Scaife and Joe Coors, and they've been just tossing piles and piles of money into this. So now maybe liberals will start to do it. Matt in Oklahoma's on the line. Hey, Matt, what's on your mind?
Not only is this administration and others, as you said, promoting the outsourcing of jobs, now the ones that are left, the Bush administration is wanting to leave the borders wide open to suck a bunch of people in that'll perform labor at a cheaper price.
There you go. We've got somewhere between 10 and 20 million citizens of Mexico, illegally working in the United States right now. Lou Dobbs says 3 million a year coming across the border. The official U.S. government statistics are 1 million a year. And the Bush administration is all in favor of that because they're big corporate benefactors, particularly the large agricultural corporations and the construction industry that make heavy use of this super cheap labor, are all in favor of it. And you know, it's in my opinion, it's wrong.
Well, I just thank God I'm a Teamster.
There you go. I mean, and hang on to it. Because, I mean, Teamsters is a good union. And that's the, I mean, there are so many truckers, for example, who listen to this program on Sirius Satellite Radio who don't qualify for union benefits, or, you know, because of because things have changed so much over the last 20, 30 years. And
I'm a railroader, and we just merged with the Teamsters here just very recently.
Yeah, good on you. Got to move along.
Alex, one more thing. Did you catch the story in the Post about, you know, we're spending, well, there's being $50 million spent for the coronation.
Yeah.
And now the city of Washington, D.C., that is the Bush administration said, oh no, we're not going to help you with that. You need to pay for that out of your own pocket. So they're having to divert funds from
Homeland Security. Yeah, we talked about this on the air in the second hour yesterday, Matt. By the way, it's Tom, not Alex. Alex was the last hour.
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
Sorry,
that's quite all right. No problem. But, yeah, we got into it. And in fact, Ellen Ratner was talking about it in her report from Washington, D.C. The Bush, and this is the first time, by the way, that an administration has held a coronation. And these really started with Ronnie Reagan. Reagan was the one who first started the, you know, moved it over to the West Lawn of the Capitol Building, the whole thing. And you know, for better TV shots and whatnot. And turn it into a multi-million dollar gala. But this is the first time that an administration has said, we're going to do it, we're going to hold it here in Washington, D.C., you guys are going to have to provide security, and you're going to have to pay for it yourself. Tough luck. We're not going to ask Congress for an appropriation for it. And good citizens of Washington...
Why don't he use some of the $50 million he raised for the coronation to pay for it?
Well, that's all accounted for other things. I mean, they got to pay for the caviar and whatnot. But anyway, I got to move along, Matt. Thanks for the call.
Good
to hear from you. But yeah, this is not going over well with the good citizens of Washington, D.C. Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan on the line. Hey, Alfred, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Three things. Number one, could you give me your opinion on why Clinton, there's this love feast suddenly with the Bushes, and the talk about the next Democratic National Committee chairman, Chris Matthews particularly has been pushing this, a Romer, and somebody else is named Frost, and I'm not familiar with either one of them. Can you give some background on them?
Yeah, Tim Romer is basically a DLC Democrat. Frost, I don't know enough about to speak intelligently at the moment.
Wasn't he a Frost from Texas, a congressman?
Yeah, I believe so. But
Romer? Was he a governor?
Tim Romer? You know, I don't recall. I thought he was a member of Congress, but I could be wrong.
I don't know.
He was on the 9/11 Commission, of course, which is what made his national reputation. He was the Democrat on the 9/11 Commission, or one of them.
Well, why is Clinton so all of a sudden now they're all saying nice things about one another when number 41 Bush wanted to punch him in the mouth once?
Because Bill Clinton knows which side his bread is buttered on. The truth be told, Bill Clinton was a conservative in many regards. He was essentially a social liberal and a fiscal conservative. For example, GATT and NAFTA would not have been passed if it wasn't for an extraordinary, extreme effort on the part of Bill Clinton. More than half of the American voters did not want NAFTA or GATT. We saw this thing coming.
One thing locally, if I may say one thing, the city of Wyoming needs money to run their police and fire department, and it was voted down in the last election.
Yeah.
And then 2 days after it was defeated, they gave General Motors a $99 million tax break, and a week or so previously to that, General Motors was going to expand in China at the tune of $3 billion.
Yeah, so what you're describing there, Alfred, in Wyoming, Michigan, is the consequence of people listening to conservative right-wing talk radio and believing that the talking points have something to do with reality, that that there is no social contract, that there is no social compact, that we don't have to pay as we go. Remember George Bush making fun of this during the debates? My opponent, he's in favor of pay as you go.
Yeah.
No, we don't have to pay as we go. We can just pass the bill along to our children and grandchildren. I mean, this is the Reagan way. It's the Bush way, and I'm sorry, it's not my way. It doesn't work, and I'm just horrified that my children are being hit with this huge bill. Alfred, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Rob in New Jersey on the line. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Thanks. I got to tell you, last night after I listened to your show on the radio around noon Eastern time about the power of nightmares.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
You went and watched it on the web.
I went and watched it on the grainy, small real player video.
Yep.
I mean, couldn't see it, from the original tape. But
yep.
Oh my God, we are in a world of trouble.
Yeah,
we're actually in the middle of the American people, and probably the human race is in the middle of a battle between two powerful fascist forces.
That's
and
right.
People don't even realize it.
I know. It's the neocons versus Al Qaeda, and both of them have the same worldview.
Yeah,
it's just that they're different teams. It's like two different NFL teams. One representing one city and one another. They both play football though.
Yeah.
But, Yeah. It's mind boggling.
Absolutely amazing.
And I
looked a little bit at your write up about it. And how you said that even Tony Blair had to fly to Washington, I guess.
Yeah, after this thing,
the president,
after this thing played in Washington.
After this thing played, because this basically undermines the entire ability for Blair to get any support in his own country.
When that thing played in England, three different people that I know in the UK called me to tell me about it. To say you wouldn't believe what we have seen on TV here that I'm sure you in America are not going to know about. Robert Scheer wrote about it in the Los Angeles Times yesterday. And the headline, and it's on Common Dreams today. You can go to commondreams.org. The headline is Al-Qaeda just a Bush boogeyman? And the subhead, is it conceivable that Al-Qaeda, as defined by President Bush as the center of a vast and well-organized international terrorist conspiracy, does not exist?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes through
this
documentary. They
created the evil empire
Right. There really is an al-Qaeda. Right. But there has, as he points out, he says, if Osama bin Laden does, in fact, head a vast international terrorist organization with trained operatives in more than 40 countries, as claimed by Bush, why, despite torture of prisoners, has this administration failed to produce any hard evidence of it?
Exactly.
How can it be
but
said?
But they didn't even have hard evidence back in the 70s and 80s about Russia or about anything.
Well, and Don Rumsfeld in the 70s was the guy who was saying that Russia had secret weapons of mass destruction, and we spent trillions of dollars with the defense contractors who later became clients of Don Rumsfeld's when he went back into the lobbying business to oppose these weapons of mass destruction that he was saying back when he was in the Ford administration, when he was Secretary of Defense. He was saying that these weapons of mass destruction that the Soviets had, that it turned out that they didn't have. We now know that they didn't have.
Has this ever played in the United States?
No, it never has, and I'm quite sure it never will.
This would be, if they ever played, I mean, this is what you expect from Frontline on PBS.
Well, this
you
is
never get it.
This is what we used to expect from 60 Minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Before CBS turned into a bunch of absolute paranoid, frantic, scared to death of the right wimps.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we can work each other up.
I'm really glad you let us know about this. This is
great
information. If anyone hasn't looked at it, you gotta just do a Google search on the power of nightmares.
Yeah,
see what nightmare the American people and the rest of the world are in the middle of. Basically, two fascist powers battling each other for the hearts and minds of people.
Yeah, there you go. And you can also go to TomHartmann.com, click articles on democracy, and I think it's the second or third, maybe fourth one down. It's pretty easy to find right there on my website. And embedded in that article are the links to the those little grainy pictures that you were just Rob was just telling you about. Thanks for the call, by the way, Rob. Where you can actually watch this 3-hour BBC documentary. This was put together by the British Broadcasting Corporation. This is not some fringe group. The British Broadcasting Corporation. How can it be that in Britain since 9/11, 664 people have been detained on suspicion of terrorism, 17 have been found guilty, none with connections to al-Qaeda? Very strange stuff. 10 minutes before the hour. Got to keep us afraid. That's what it's about. We'll be right back.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An amateur scientist chases snowflakes and creates captivating photographs. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Pat Belling likes winter, but it's not skiing or ice fishing that makes her heart beat faster. Belling works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, and for the past 23 years, she's spent her winter free time photographing snowflakes. Most snowflake photographers take their pictures outside to capture the flakes before they melt, but Belling found she could spread an acrylic sealant on a microscope slide and capture the imprint of any flake that landed on it. Armed with a cold cookie sheet of these resin-coated slides, Belling waits for snow.
And it has to be a perfect snow. There are years I can't get any because it's too wet here, it's too heavy, it's too windy. It's got to be that perfect snow when you go out and you put your arms out and you see the individual flakes. And then it has to land perfectly, because if it lands on an angle, it crumbles. Or if something else hits it, another snowflake, it's not going to be a perfect catch. So the first time I got it, I got one of these really complex ones. It was like finding a diamond.
Belling then brings the slides indoors, waits hours for the tiny imprints to dry, and counts her catch using a microscope attached to a camera. She says capturing even a piece of a snowflake is exciting, and she gladly teaches her technique to others.
When you have something so natural, so beautiful, you need to share it. It's sort of like that AdWords, this costs this much, this costs this much, but this is priceless. I've had people come back at shows the next year and say to me, "You know, I don't look at snow in the same way since I've met you." It's really rewarding. And kids will say, "You mean that's what it looks like when I eat it?"
Belling's photographs are currently on display at the Mosquito Hill Nature Center in New London, Wisconsin. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Trying to make a living, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, welcome back.
Easy trying to stretch a nickel into a dime.
This is where we started the show, is this whole conservative economic thing. The Al-Qaeda thing, just to put it out, because the IRA has been just, you know, the phones have just been lit up, people going, "What is that? Where do I get that? How do I find?" I did a show on this about 3-4 weeks ago, maybe a little longer, when I wrote an article about it that was on Common Dreams, and it was syndicated all over the Internet. You can find it, and in the article are the links to where you can see the bootleg copy of it on the Internet, because it's not for sale in the United States. It was a BBC documentary, and informationclearinghouse.info has a bootleg copy of it on their website that you can watch on your computer. And so and it's embedded in this article that I wrote, so what you do is you go to www.tomhartman.com, however you spell it, it'll get you there. And then up at the top, there's a bunch of links. You know, there's the chat room link to get to the chat room and so on. There's one over on the right called Articles on Democracy. Click on that, and you'll be at an archive of all the various pieces I've written for Common Dreams. It's the fourth one down. It's called Hyping Terror for Fun and Profit. And you click on that, read the article, and you can click on the links and actually watch this three-hour movie on your computer if you want. Bill in New York is on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
It's funny, you were talking about the slave class in America. I was saying that same exact thing back in the 70s when the first Bush was in office.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you get paid just enough money to be able to accept. We were different slaves back, you know, I was saying this. You get paid just enough money to buy the house or rent the house, put a roof over your head and buy some food, and that was about it.
Yep.
And we were a slave class then, and we're being pushed right back to that now.
And the reason why is because it renders people politically impotent. If they are desperate and terrified, they tend not to be political.
Yep.
They tend instead simply to work, to work an extra 10 hours a week at Walmart or whatever.
And a simple way you can prove it is with a Monopoly game. I turned around and I was playing the game one time when I was winning the game. And as soon as, instead of letting people lose and cash out, I would just, like, sell off some property. That I'm being like the wealthy, selling off some property to the people out there, but keeping knowing I have enough reserve money just to pounce back at them at any time. And then when I felt they were getting too much, I would just raise my rents, do this, put up motels, pounce on them. And I was controlling the game for hours on end until I finally realized what I was up to.
Absolutely.
And,
you know, you know, the Monopoly game was actually brought out in the 1920s as a way of educating people, as a progressive device for educating people about the evils of Monopoly. That was the whole point of it, was to wake people up. Bill, thanks for the call. Good, yeah, it still works. Good, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. We gotta wrap this hour of the program up. In the next hour, we're going to be asking, what do you want your tax dollars to pay for? How about promoting an elite sect of Christianity? Your tax dollars at work? How about Reverend Moon? Your tax dollars at work? We'll see. And then Rama Schneider's going to be in here for the third hour of the program today. Got to finish up that trip to the dentist. Eddie, how's the Tom Hartman program?
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 100 Orlando police officers held a silent vigil outside of City Hall on Monday as the mayor held a workshop to discuss their salaries inside. Fraternal Order of Police Labor Committee Chairman Sam Hoffman says that the workshop held by Mayor John Dyer was in violation of labor laws, as only council members were allowed to speak. The two sides have been involved in a dispute over pay raises since July of 2004. A statement by the mayor said the primary reason pay raises weren't offered was because the city had a $5 million deficit. The police then hired an accounting firm to examine the city's financial statements. A day after the firm requested a copy of the city's annual report, Dyer issued a press release stating Orlando actually had a surplus of $8 million. Hoffman says the mayor is sending mixed messages.
Either you have a deficit or you have a surplus. You can't have both at the same time. So this information that the mayor has released recently is curious at best, and we continue with our investigation.
SEIU District 1199 in Wisconsin has successfully negotiated a contract with University of Wisconsin Hospitals that it believes could serve as a national model to alleviate some staffing and salary issues among nurses. SEIU says the contract eliminates mandatory overtime by 2006. Economic incentives include seniority-based across-the-board wage increases of 19% over 2 years. Kathy Anthony, an SEIU nurse at UW Hospitals in Madison, says nurses are also assured of a voice in patient care in this groundbreaking contract.
I find it very exciting, the new attitude toward nurses' input in decision-making, hospital-wide, unit-wide. It's, to me, exciting, and I think that it will go a long way in retaining nurses and overcoming the shortage of nurses.
Better staffing levels and more time with patients are two things often cited by nurses as key to keeping them in health care. The SEIU and Anthony believe this contract at University of Wisconsin Hospitals achieves gains in those areas.
Studies have shown that attractive salaries bring nurses in, but what retains nurses is that you recognize their expertise. You hear their voice when it comes to patient care decisions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. U.S. workers' hourly wages continue to decline when adjusted for inflation, and economists see no sign of a turnaround. The average growth for wages fell below 3% during the period between September 2003 and September 2004. Pay grew at 2.4%, the lowest increase on record. Economists say that part of the blame lies with soaring health benefit expenses for employers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Have you got your ticket yet? You're simply nobody if you don't have a seat at the exclusive lunch being held for Bush's inauguration, where you can break bread with George himself. You might find the bread a bit pricey, though, since the ticket goes for $250,000. But that's not as bad as it sounds, for not only do you get to shoot the breeze with George, but Dick Cheney will also be there, so you get a twofer. George likes the small talk, but with Dick, you can talk some serious business, like maybe about that little regulatory change you need the Bushites to make for your company. Oh, that's another benefit you get. The $250,000 underwriter ticket comes with a promise that, quote, your corporation will be recognized on all printed materials. So your bean counters back at headquarters can just write off the quarter mill as an advertising expense, totally deductible from the corporate income tax. Don't you love the loopholes? And hey, you don't get loopholes unless you're sitting at the table with the big boys. It's called pay to play. What a great country. But wait, you say, I don't have $250,000. Not to worry. You can buy the sponsor package for only $100,000. See, there's room for everyone at Bush's table. Well, for that, you don't actually get to lunch with him, but you would get to attend one of three elegant dinners featuring appearances by George and Dick. Sure, some of you liberal-type spoil sports will say it's unseemly to be throwing a week-long $40 million inaugural extravaganza for fat cats while America has 130,000 troops stuck in Bush's bloody debacle in Iraq. But the Bushites have thought of that, too. There's to be a commander-in-chief's ball, and military personnel get a free ticket to it. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, that's mighty small comfort to the soldiers in faraway Iraq, who, I imagine, would rather have George finally provide some armor for their vehicles than a ticket to his inaugural ball.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it ended last month. You didn't know? The search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Yeah, sure enough, it ended last month. Nobody told you. Well, it's, what can I say? It had been going on, you know. We had been spending all this money on it. And it turns out, in fact, that the Pentagon is telling us now that they're not going to let us know how many hundreds of millions of dollars were spent on this search for phony weapons of mass destruction. But they called it off last month. Ain't going to do it no more. That's it. No more.
We must also never forget the most vivid events of recent history.
Oh, yes. We're going to talk about 9/11.
September the 11th.
There you go, right?
2001. America felt its vulnerability.
Right in the middle of a speech about
Saddam.
Even
to threats that gather on the other side of the earth.
And then he goes on to say in the same speech.
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Yeah, and you wonder why so many people who voted for Bush think that
if we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Why so many people think that we actually found the weapons when we didn't?
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons and is capable of killing millions. We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
Yeah, we know that because your daddy sold it to them, but it was destroyed after 1991. I mean, that was it. That was it. Charles Dolfer, this from the Washington Post today, report to Congress, contradicted nearly every pre-war assertion. Nearly every pre-war assertion about Iraq made by top Bush administration officials. A senior intelligence official said the findings will stand as the ISG's final conclusions that will be published this spring. They have given up. The hunt for biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons in Iraq has come to an end nearly 2 years after George Bush, you know, bloody blah. Congress allotted hundreds of millions of dollars, or as George would say, hundreds of millions of dollars for the weapons hunt, and there has been no public accounting of the money. A spokesman for the Pentagon's Defense Intelligence Agency said the entire budget and the expenditures would remain classified. And now, not only this, they arrested a whole bunch of Saddam scientists who haven't been doing anything. They've been basically unemployed since 1991. None of the scientists has been involved in weapons programs since the Gulf War of 1991. This is according to the Inspector General's Office. The ISG determined more than a year ago. More than a year ago, we determined that. None of these people have been doing anything since 91, when we beat them and told them to stop. And all have cooperated with investigators despite nearly 2 years of jail time without charges. What are we doing? We're going to keep them in jail. They're still in jail. U.S. officials previously said they were being held because their denials of ongoing weapons programs were presumed to be lies. Well, now that we know that they've been telling us the truth, we're still going to keep them in jail. Tyrannus Rex. I mean, you know, this is the Pastor Niemöller moment. I'm telling you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Spike in Easton, Pennsylvania, on the line. Hey, Spike, what's on your mind?
Hey, hi, Tom. It's great to talk to you, especially since I listen to you on satellites, and now I can't hear you live, unfortunately.
Ah, yeah, this hour and the next one are time delayed. You can hear them later on, but yeah.
Yeah, anyway. I try every night, and I fall asleep before I get to those hours. I just wanted to talk. You were talking about a left-wing Fox News idea.
Yeah.
I live, unfortunately, in Pennsylvania. The local media is so to the right, it's ridiculous. What I'd really like to see, almost like how Sinclair moved in locally, a liberal network that moved in like that, and maybe even do it like hand in hand with the recent cover story for The Nation with Profits for Justice, maybe have some sort of business that would support that idea.
Build it from the ground up.
Yeah, this way you don't have to do like PBS and charge people, you know, $80 for a DVD and a calendar, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it a little bit easier and make it so the local community really puts into it a little bit more.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, Spike. And in fact, you know, we've been having some conversations with some groups. We had a conversation a couple nights ago with a fellow who's the head of a national advocacy group, a democracy advocacy group. And we're talking about, you know, trying to get local communities around the country
to get together and find sponsors and marry sponsors and radio stations with progressive programming. I mean, specifically my program, but really I'm in favor of any progressive programming anywhere in the country. We need more, and not just because I'm a, quote, liberal, end quote, but because I think that democracy is not served if you don't hear two voices. I do not want Rush Limbaugh taken off the air, but I do think that there needs to be a countervailing voice. And, in fact, I would say, you know, Limbaugh does pretty good radio. So there's some of the others are pretty weak. I think, you know, Hannity's kind of a weenie, you know, he's just basically working off his callers and not. He doesn't bring much to the conversation, but there's actually some fairly good talk radio on the right, and there is some fairly good talk radio on the left, and people in America should hear it. And like you say, the same with TV. I mean, Fox News can do it, and they can demonstrate that it's commercially viable, and they have, although they lost money for 5 years. You got to have deep pockets to do it. Then it should be something that can be doable on the left.
And can I ask you a question real quick?
Sure.
Also?
Sure.
You mentioned like Sean Hannity, as far as I know, he doesn't really have much of a background to be doing what he does. And some people would argue the same for Michael Moore, even though I don't want to bash him. My question is, how does someone get into getting a radio show, you know, in talk radio?
Yeah, you pay your dues. you do it. I mean, I worked in radio for a decade back in the 60s and 70s. From 1968 to 1978, I was on the air every day, 5 days a week. And very often on weekends. And as a DJ, I did news for a couple of years. I was a news director. I was a program director for a little less than a year. Worked in small stations, large stations, and then got out of radio. And then when I got back doing this show, we started out in Vermont. I went to a local radio station in Vermont, here in Vermont where I live, and said I'd like to, you know, try out a liberal talk radio and see if we can make it work. We were doing it on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon. And we did it for a couple of months, put together a demo, sent it off to a network. At that time, it was the IE America Radio Network, was the only liberal talk radio network out there. It was owned by the UAW. And they said, this is good, and put me on the air. And we've carried on from there. So the bottom line is, you know, whether Hannity has training in radio or, you know, in democracy or whatever, or anybody else. I mean, basically, it's you just do it. You do it. I mean, it's just like with anything else. You want something to work. You start at the beginning and you take that first step. It's the same thing with Rush Limbaugh. He started as a DJ the same year I did, 1968, and only he was on his father's station in Sacramento, and I was on WITL in Lansing, Michigan, country western station, but you know, we both started out as 17-year-old kids in radio, you know. So,
I can't even believe you're about as old as he is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm the same age. I'm 53.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, I mean, I'm a highly over-opinionated person at times, too, myself. Yeah. And that's why I just laugh. I hear all these people. It's like, well, I could go on like that, too, you know?
Well, some people can. I mean, there's some good young talent on the right and on the left. There's a lot of good people, and there's a lot of room for it right now. And I think that, you know, anybody listening who wants to get into liberal talk radio on the left, there is space. And there, because if you look at in major markets, You'll have, you know, two, three, in some cases, four right-wing shows all competing in the same market. Take this noon to three slot that I'm in. You've got Limbaugh, you've got O'Reilly, you've got Dennis Prager, then there's Tammy Bruce now. There's four layers of nationally syndicated right-wing talk radio. And if a market will support four layers of right-wing talk radio, and then usually there's a local right-wing talker as well, five layers of right-wing talk radio, it'll certainly support two or three layers of left-wing talk radio. Any market that already has, for example, Air America, can also support other progressive programming. I'm convinced. I mean, the reality of the marketplace is just, I think, essentially irrefutable. So if you're interested in getting into it, or you know somebody who is, I say just get started. Spike, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
All right. Thank you very much. Great.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Pushed the button a little too quickly there. Hey, Ken in Warren, Michigan. What's up?
Well, I want to make a comment about Bush's idea for curing up the Social Security problem.
Yeah.
I think that what he needs to do is tell these corporations that have shifted all their operations from the United States to Malaysia, Vietnam, China, get yourself back here to the United States and put people back to work.
Yeah, this is one of the big problems, Ken, and one of the reasons why they want to privatize this thing so quickly is because the reality of the dropping wages among the middle class in the United States, which have been steadily going downhill ever since Ronald Reagan was elected president. The reality of that is not factored into many of the actuarial, you know, many of the statistics that they're, so they say, you know, well, we're going to have a problem down the road. It's going to be even worse because people are earning less and less. That means that they're going to have less and less coming back. And these guys would really rather have you upset with your stockbroker than have you upset with the government.
Right. Well, Bush was saying last night that there's only two people paying into Social Security now for all the retirees.
Well, actually,
that's because there's nobody paying in with the good paying jobs. They're all gone.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Jobs won't support Social Security. Nobody pays into it.
That's part of it, Ken. And part of it is just what's called a demographic bulge, and that's the baby boomer generation. But see, that had happened before. I mean, the reality is that from the time that Social Security was created, 1936 or 37, whenever it was created, from then until around 1960, it was basically pay as you go. It wasn't until the 1960s that Social Security actually started accumulating a profit, a surplus in the trust fund. And right now there's enough of a surplus in the trust fund that when we hit 2012 or 2014 or 2018 and the amount coming in starts to match the amount going out, we will still be able to pay up until 2042 or 2052, depending on whether you're listening to Congress or the Social Security Administration, which is a long time out. We're talking 40 years from now. We will still be able to pay all of the benefits out of that surplus that Social Security has accumulated over all these years, and is drawing interest on. I mean, right now Social Security has invested all these T-bills, and they're drawing interest. They're actually making money, and so you know there's a non-issue there. And the other thing is that what they're not pointing out is that the demographic cycles go around. Right now we have two for one, and then it's going to be one for one, but then it's going to be two for one, and then it's going to be three for one and four for one because you've got another bulge coming down the road. It's like a series of rabbits moving through a boa constrictor. They come one after another. So it's not a permanent problem the way that the Bush administration is portraying it. If they simply eliminated the cap on the Social Security tax and made it a flat tax rather than a purely regressive tax, it would solve the entire problem. I mean, that would just end of discussion. Let Bill Gates pay the same amount of Social Security tax as I do or as you do or as anybody else does, and problem solved. But no, the cons don't like that. What? People making more than $90,000 a year have to pay Social Security tax? How dare they suggest such a thing? 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site
at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
ongoing
get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Come heed me, good brothers, come here, one and all. Don't brag about standing, or you'll surely fall.
And welcome back.
You're shining your light, and shine it you should. But you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good.
What a problem.
No earthly good you are.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes, almost 25 minutes before the hour. And another 15 seconds here. Tom Hartman here with you. The home of reality-based radio. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Victoria Jones in Washington, D.C. with the Talk Radio News Service on the line for our report from Washington for the day. Hey, Victoria. Haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, good to talk to you again.
Nice to hear your voice again. How's everything there, and what's up in Washington, D.C.?
Well, up in Washington, D.C., we've got new dietary guidelines come out from the government that have got people blenching as they're hearing that maybe they'll have to do 60 to 90 minutes of exercise when they were just trying to get into 30 minutes of exercise. And one of the big questions always in Washington when this comes out is, fine, it's out, and how do you get people to know what it means and to do it? Because it doesn't seem that the wherewithal is there once it's out.
And does it apply to our schools?
Understand.
And does it apply to our schools? You know, as far as I know, they're kind of doing away with phys ed these days.
They seem to be doing away with phys ed. In some places, apparently, they're doing away with recess. And at the same time, the food at school cafeterias is, you know, junk.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's tricky. So that's one thing that's going on. Meantime, people reacting to these stories out that, in fact, they called off the search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq when they didn't find any, and they called the search off before Christmas, and that nobody was told. I mean, there is a report coming out, but we only found out because newspapers published a story about it today.
Today in the Washington Post, I was mentioning that. It's pretty amazing. And Helen Thomas taking on Scotty McClellan about this.
Pretty soon, I mean... Helen's going to get her pass revoked, I should think.
Yeah, well, God bless her. I mean, she is one of my heroes. She is absolutely one of my heroes, Helen Thomas. She is just an extraordinary. Is this not one damn dime day getting any traction, do you think? The idea that on the 20th, on inaugural day, everybody across the country is not going to spend a penny?
I think what's getting traction in Washington now is that Washington itself may have to pay for it. And that's what's got people exercised in this area.
Yeah.
Because there's a feeling that not only is it incredibly expensive, but that it is a federal thing. And why should local D.C., which is already struggling, have to cough up for it?
Well, because King George III said so.
Exactly.
I mean, it's never been done before. Congress has always appropriated funds, but George III, he is the third George to be head of the United States. We had Washington, Bush Sr., and him, so I think we should start calling him George the third. Yes, and
the fourth, really.
The fourth?
Well, if you say that you had George the original George the third.
Well, no, but he was.
You threw him off.
Yeah, but he wasn't. He was not the head of the United States. He was the head of North America.
No, okay, not the head of the United States. Okay, head of the country, and not.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Yeah.
So we declared independence from the third George to rule England, and now we have the third George ruling America. And there are some folks saying it's time to declare independence again.
Yeah, those are the ones lining up to go to Canada.
Yeah. So, any other news out of Washington D.C.?
Well, that's one of them. Obviously, people also trying to figure out more about Judge Chertoff, who's up for Homeland Security. I asked Scott McClellan yesterday during the press briefing, could he tell us a little bit about Chertoff's experience in managing large bureaucracies, seeing as the Homeland Security Department has 180,000 employees, and he told me that Chertoff managed the criminal department in the Department of Division and Department of Justice with hundreds of employees. Of course, they were hundreds, not hundreds of thousands, and they're all basically on the same page as the criminal division. It's not disparate entities such as the Coast Guard and immigration and everything else. So I think there'll be some questions about that when he comes up for confirmation.
I'm far more concerned about his role in rolling out the Patriot Act and chopping up our civil liberties and his role in the Massawi prosecution, where he was saying that because the government is holding a witness in federal detention in Guantanamo, that person doesn't, you know, that Massawi is not entitled to his Sixth Amendment right to be confronted by his accuser. That's scares me.
We'll get some good questions on this in the confirmation.
There you go. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks so much for being
with
us today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 100 Orlando police officers held a silent vigil outside of City Hall on Monday as the mayor held a workshop to discuss their salaries inside. Fraternal Order of Police Labor Committee Chairman Sam Hoffman says that the workshop held by Mayor John Dyer was in violation of labor laws, as only council members were allowed to speak. The two sides have been involved in a dispute over pay raises since July of 2004. A statement by the mayor said the primary reason pay raises weren't offered was because the city had a $5 million deficit. The police then hired an accounting firm to examine the city's financial statements. A day after the firm requested a copy of the city's annual report, Dyer issued a press release stating Orlando actually had a surplus of $8 million. Hoffman says the mayor is sending mixed messages.
Either you have a deficit or you have a surplus. You can't have both at the same time. So this information that the mayor has released recently is curious at best, and we continue with our investigation.
SEIU District 1199 in Wisconsin has successfully negotiated a contract with University of Wisconsin Hospitals that it believes could serve as a national model to alleviate some staffing and salary issues among nurses. SEIU says the contract eliminates mandatory overtime by 2006. Economic incentives include seniority-based across-the-board wage increases of 19% over 2 years. Kathy Anthony, an SEIU nurse at UW Hospitals in Madison, says nurses are also assured of a voice in patient care in this groundbreaking contract.
I find it very exciting, the new attitude toward nurses' input in decision-making, hospital-wide, unit-wide, it's, to me, exciting, and I think that it will go a long way in retaining nurses and overcoming the shortage of nurses.
Better staffing levels and more time with patients are two things often cited by nurses as key to keeping them in health care. The SEIU and Anthony believe this contract at University of Wisconsin Hospitals achieves gains in those areas.
Studies have shown that attractive salaries bring nurses in, but what retains nurses is that you recognize their expertise, you hear their voice when it comes to patient care decisions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. U.S. workers' hourly wages continue to decline when adjusted for inflation, and economists see no sign of a turnaround. The average growth for wages fell below 3% during the period between September 2003 and September 2004. Pay grew at 2.4%, the lowest increase on record. Economists say that part of the blame lies with soaring health benefit expenses for employers.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn.
And welcome back. Speaking of burning books, is it time to burn Darwin? And why is it that William Jennings Bryan, this guy who was a progressive, a super progressive, why did he argue against Clarence Darrow in the Scopes monkey trial? Why did he not want Darwin taught in the schools? And how is this coming back around? I want to share some what I consider to be very interesting information with you. First, let's just get this call here. Rick in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Well, I was listening to the Alan Combs show on our local one of our local radio stations here last night, and you know, speaking of that, he's a nice guy, but he's a pretty weak advocate for liberalism. But he had a caller call in and kind of asked a rhetorical question as to what would have happened if Al Gore had been elected in 2000, and then, you know, the September 11th attack occurred, and he looked for Osama bin Laden and didn't find him, and then he went into Iraq looking for weapons of mass destruction and didn't find any, as now I guess officially they said there were none. And, you know, it's just kind of a rhetorical question. Of course, in addition to that, I could add that although they criticized Kerry, for instance, for not voting for some military authorization during this war, do you recall back around the time we were involved in Kosovo and Bosnia and so forth?
Yeah.
I think it was right around the time they were getting ready to impeach Clinton.
Yeah, and they were saying that he was doing all this stuff to wag the dog, and he was trying to kill bin Laden, and they said it was the
wag the dog. Did not do was they did not authorize. It was a tie vote in the House of Representatives, engineered by Tom DeLay. They did not appropriate the money for the troops, so to speak. And
yeah.
I guess my question is, and again, it's probably just basically rhetorical, because I think you and most of your audience would agree, but how do the Republicans get away with doing this kind of stuff, where if the Democrats do it, they pay a supreme penalty of losing an election, or even in Clinton's case, of getting impeached?
The way that the Republicans get away with it is the result of 25 years and billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars, spent in building a media empire.
But how does that affect people's minds? I mean, people should still have their own brains and think for themselves.
Yeah, you would think so, but I mean, the people our opinions are to a large extent a consequence of the information that we have, and the cons have built this huge media machine, this huge right wing talk machine on the radio. They've got the Washington Times, which is still losing money to this day. They got Fox News.
Right.
They have managed to cow, to absolutely intimidate the mainstream media to the point where CBS here now, you know, is firing these people and pretending as if their story was phony. There was nothing phony in that story except the documents, which still we don't know whether or not they were forgeries. But let's say that they were. All of the facts that were presented in that story are still not in dispute. Nobody is disputing the fact that George W. Bush used his father's influence, and a good friend of his father made a phone call
and got him into the Texas Air National Guard. Nobody's disputing the fact that he didn't show up for over a year. Nobody's disputing the fact that he failed to take the medical when they started testing for drugs in the urine. Nobody's disputing the fact that at the very end he said, hey, I've got other things to do, and he got out to go off to Harvard Business School. None of that, and that he used influence all along the way, and nobody's disputing any of it. I mean, the documents are frankly irrelevant. They right. never should have been used in the whole documentary. I mean, that was the crime that CBS committed, is that they didn't need those documents to make that story.
Which is one last thought, too. I wish Fox and the other networks would pay as much attention to who outed Valerie Plame. We hardly even hear about that.
Yeah, well,
there's a crime.
There's a crime, absolutely. Rick, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. There is a crime indeed. And time will tell. Somehow I doubt that Alberto Gonzalez, the personal attorney to George W., good friend with Karl Rove, close associate of Dick Cheney and Scooter Libby, is going to be real enthusiastic about putting any of these guys in jail for committing treason here in the United States. The news story is that the Dover area, the Dover, Pennsylvania area school district, on January 7th, this is what, last week? I don't have a calendar in front of me, but on January 7th, voted to agree to exempt science teachers temporarily from having to read a statement describing evolution as a theory. Now, get this. This is, as of the first of the year, the school districts in Pennsylvania were saying, you have to read this to your students before you teach them biology. And I quote, "The Pennsylvania academic standards require students to learn about Darwin's theory of evolution and eventually to take a standardized test of which evolution is a part. Because Darwin's theory is a theory, it continues to be tested as new evidence is discovered. The theory is not a fact. Gaps in the theory exist for which there is no evidence. A theory is defined as a well-tested explanation that unifies a broad range of observations." And then they go on to say, "Intelligent design is an explanation for the origin of life that differs from Darwin's view. The reference book of Pandas and People is available for students who might be interested in gaining an understanding of what intelligent design actually involves. With respect to any theory, students are encouraged to keep an open mind." Do you get this? These cons have actually gotten everybody in the state of Pennsylvania here to be reading a pitch for a book to their students. A pitch for a book, which was written by Percival Davis and Dean Kenyon. Davis co-wrote another book called The Case for Creation. It was published by the Moody Bible Institute. When they wrote Pandas, Davis was quoted by the Wall Street Journal in 1994 story, quote, "Of course my motives were religion. There's no question religious, so there's no question about it," end quote. Intelligent design is creationism, you know, repackaged. Now, yes, there are holes in Darwin's theory of evolution. There's a very significant one. The lack, in many cases, of transitional species. What happened to the missing link between us and, for example, our cousins, the chimpanzees? You know, we share 99% of our DNA, but not 99.99. And where's that 1% guy? Well, the explanation that answers this, of course, is what Stephen Jay Gould put forth, and as I recall, it was 1987. I may be wrong. It might be 78 anyway. It was 20, 30 years ago. Stephen Jay Gould, Harvard professor of biology, as I recall, and in an article that was first published in Nature, my recollection, and later turned into a book, Stephen Jay Gould suggested that there was this thing called punctuated evolution. That Darwin's theory was that evolution moved very slowly and gradually over time. And certainly there is evidence of that, as Darwin documented with his story about the finches in the Galapagos Islands, when he went there with the HMS Beagle, you know, and he wrote all about that in Origin of the Species. And he found that there were these finches, some had big beaks and some had small beaks, and the big beak ones would, you know, for a couple of years would be the dominant ones, and then they would eat all the seeds that the big beak ones could eat, and there was nothing left but these small seeds, and then the small beaked ones would become the dominant ones. And, you know, okay, gradual change, more or less. But Stephen Jay Gould came along and he said, no, the way it works is, and you can see this with bacteria, is there are what are called bottlenecks. If thousands of years where nothing happens, maybe millions of years where species just kind of hang out and there's not a lot of change. There's small Darwinian, small gradual evolutionary changes, but really not much happens. And then a disaster strikes. And it wipes out 99.9% of the species. It wipes out virtually everybody. And there's one guy left who is carrying a genetic mutation that just happens to be the genetic mutation necessary to survive this disaster. And he becomes the father of the new version of the species. Or she becomes the mother of the, as the case may be, or they. We saw this in England with the Black Plague. It's really interesting. The Black Plague wiped out a third of England, right? A third of the UK. And they found now that there are some people who are actually immune to the AIDS virus. And they carry a gene that immunizes them from AIDS. It's very rare because they have to carry this gene both from their mother and from their father. They have to get it from both parents. They have to carry both versions of the gene, double version of the gene. And so it's very, very rare. But this gene, it turns out, was the gene that allowed people to survive the Black Plague. 100% of these people are the descendants of people who survived the Black Plague in England. Fascinating. It's punctuated evolution. It's how bacteria develop immunities. You got bacteria, and you introduce penicillin, and the penicillin wipes out 99.9% of the bacteria. They all die. Yeah, they're gone. But there was that little one out of a million, or one out of a thousand, or one out of, actually it's probably more like one out of a million, one out of a billion, that had a genetic mutation that allowed it to not have the penicillin interrupt its DNA replication, or not allow the penicillin in through the cell membrane, or had some sort of pump that would pump the penicillin back out of the cell membrane, and it was able to ignore the penicillin. And that bacteria, in the presence of penicillin, could still live. And so, boom, you've got a brand new species. It's called punctuated evolution. This was Stephen Jay Gould's theory. And he said, and that's why you don't find transitional species, because there's very few of them. Might be one guy. Well, instead of talking about that in our schools, apparently, what they want to talk about is that various religions have posited that God created humans fully formed 6,000 years ago, end of discussion, and that the world is only 10,000 years old. That's it. Or maybe only 6,000 years old. And this is presented as science. Now, why would somebody like William Jennings Bryan defend that position in the Scopes Monkey Trial? It turns out that the reason that he did this, the reason that Bryant defended that position, was because he was a progressive. In fact, he ran for president a couple of times. He was a progressive. He unfortunately got trashed in the trial. I mean, Clarence Darrow just took him apart on redirect examination and demonstrated that Bryant himself had not bothered to learn the science. Right. And many people say this killed him. I mean, 5 days after the end of the trial, Bryant died. But Bryant was afraid that if Darwin was taught in our schools, that the idea of survival of the fittest would be applied economically and politically. Because this is what was happening in England. The theories of Darwin in the 19th century were being used to justify hierarchy and aristocracy. People were saying, well, you got the rich ruling and you got the poor being ruled. It must be survival of the fittest. And Clarence Darrow thought, that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. And we can't be teaching our children about Darwin because they will then think that survival of the fittest is how it all works. And it's got to be something more than that. Darrow was also a devout Christian. But, whether he was skeptical about this, it was actually in 6 days, 7 days thing or not, nobody's really sure. But the broad consensus of his friends at the time seems to be that he was perfectly willing to believe that may have been millions of years involved in humans coming about, but he didn't want Darwin taught because Darwin was being used to justify social Darwinism. Yeah, most people don't realize that. So anyhow, here we have ID, Intelligent design. How is it different from creationism? The only way it's different is that intelligent design doesn't name who the God was that created us, fully formed exactly as we are 6,000 years ago, magically. It was first put forth in 1802, a guy by the name of William Paley, a theologian, a churchman, and he suggested that everything, all of creation was like a watch. Richard Dawkins talks about this in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, in fact. He cites Paley. That the entire universe was like a watch, and God was the watchmaker, and you and I, and every living thing, everything else was the gears. It's this he was really, in a way, taking the Aristotelian view, the view that Aristotle had of atomism, right? That everything was reducible down to mechanical pieces. And applying that in a religious context and saying that these mechanisms are so much more complex than anything that we could think up, that therefore there must be something much more intelligent than us that thought it all up. And he may well be right, by the way. I have to say, you know, my personal theology is that there is intelligence in the universe, that the entire universe is intelligent. There's a much vaster intelligence than you and me. But that, in my mind, doesn't preclude evolution. And I think, you know, I think the vast majority of Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindu, I mean, these are all religions that teach that the world was created at a specific time, somewhere between 6 and 20,000 years ago. Hindus go back 20,000 years. And most people realize that this was metaphorical. It was a way of explaining how, you know, 'cause every religion has a creation story. You know, whether it's, you know, the Hopi with the giant turtle. I mean, pick your story, right? Every religion has a creation story. But does that mean that we should teach it in school as science? I think it's entirely appropriate that we teach it as religion. I was fascinated when we lived in Germany back in 86. We put our kids in the German public schools, and they had to study religion. It was one of the classes. I thought that was, you know, I think that, you know, comparative religion, understanding the religions, different religions of the world, I think it's a good thing. We should do it. We should do it. We should do more of it. But here we got a situation now. In Kansas, State Board of Education in 1999 erased the mention of evolution from the schools to the state science standards. In February, the State Education Board will hold new hearings on this scientific controversy surrounding evolution. Say what? In Maryland, in Elkton, the school superintendent has blocked the use of a new biology textbook because it doesn't include creationism. In Ohio, parents in the Forest Hill School District wanted of pandas and people included in science courses. This is not science. This is dressed-up religion, which is just fine, but present it as what it is. Let's be honest about this stuff. In 2000, Kanawha County Board of Education thought of buying of pandas and people. I eventually declined. In Texas, in 1995, in Plano, school's trustees were split on this thing. Pandas and people. Why don't we just be upfront with our kids about the reality of this stuff? Hey, there's a debate going on between the you know, different sects of the religions. Here's the debate. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush O, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
With a Workers' Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. In New York City last week, labor unions, food retailers, and small business owners came together to form a coalition to protest the construction of a Walmart in Queens in 2008. The coalition claims that Walmart sets a precedent of lower standards for hardworking men and women throughout the world. Rebecca Miles has the story.
At the press conference at New York City Hall, Brian McLaughlin, president of the New York City Central Labor Council, talked about his concerns over a Walmart being constructed in Queens.
You know, New York City is unique. It's a city of communities. In Queens County, where I come from, it's Flushing, it's Little Neck, it's Rego Park, it's Woodhaven, it's Ozone Park, it's Howard Beach, it's Maspeth, and in the other boroughs as well. And in a city where mass transit is essential, we know that Walmart comes to an area, undermines the competitors in that area with temporarily low prices. Once they destroy their competitors, people are forced to travel longer distances, and the theory of community is undermined. The quality of life in the community is undermined.
Walmart is the biggest private employer in the U.S. with 1 million workers. And while politicians welcome the hiring of new employees the retail giant represents, the jobs are short-term. For every 2 new hires, 3 jobs leave the community. Steve Barrison from the Small Business Congress had this to say.
Walmart has a history of being a bad neighbor in the communities in which they live. They have a history of mistreating their employees. They are the most sued company in America. There have been numerous violations of the way they have treated their workers. Do we need another box store? Do we need another employer coming in here and instead of adding to our communities, draining our communities?
200 communities across the country have already said no to Walmart. So what will Mayor Bloomberg and the City Council decide? For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting in New York.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Hey now, you better listen to me, every one of you.
Alrighty.
We've got a lot of work to do. Forget about your women and that water can.
Say what?
Today you're working for the man.
Yes, working for the man. Yes, welcome to the new America. Where there is no middle class, there's just the CEOs.
I'm gonna see you make it on time.
And the rest of us. That's it. Anyhow, welcome back. 5 minutes, 4 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Dave, how are you today? What's on your
really
mind?
Really great, Tom. A very interesting program. I think if I'd heard, maybe I heard it wrong, but Charles Darwin was a believer. He believed that nature had a creator.
Yes.
And Clarence Darrow described himself as an atheist, and William Jennings Bryan was a fundamentalist. He believed literally the Bible literally to be interpreted, and that's why he undertook to defend, to prosecute.
Well, but, you know, there are actually two histories of that, and it's really interesting, Dave, because if you read history books from, well, when I was a kid, from 20, 30 years ago, you get the story and that Clarence Darrow, I'm sorry, that William Jennings Bryant was arguing the case because he did not want Darwinism taught because he thought it would lead to social Darwinism. In other words, the rule by the rich is okay because they are the most fit to survive. And he was, although he was a Christian and a fundamentalist believer of Christianity, but then the fundamentalists kind of hijacked his memory. And you'll find it's really interesting. You go out and do a web search, and you'll find a whole bunch of websites that say that the only reason that Bryant took this case was because he truly believed that God created the world in 6 days, end of discussion. And that was very much not the case. I mean, you read the transcript of the trial, and the reason why he was willing to put his entire reputation on the line was he thought Darwin was a dangerous doctrine, not for religious reasons, but for political reasons.
Oh, you know, I had one other thought
social
for you on
reasons.
This, and that was recently a brilliant scientist announced that he had solved the age-old problem of the evolutionists. He had discovered the missing link between the great apes and civilized man, and it is us. When you think about it.
It is us. It's George W. Bush.
Things start making a lot of sense when you...
It's you and me, Dave. Who knows? Dave, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Always good to hear from you. Well, folks, I'm off to the dentist. Rama Schneider is here. He's going to fill in the next hour of the program. I will be back tomorrow. Thanks for joining us for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 100 Orlando police officers held a silent vigil outside of City Hall on Monday as the mayor held a workshop to discuss their salaries inside. Fraternal Order of Police Labor Committee Chairman Sam Hoffman says that the workshop held by Mayor John Dyer was in violation of labor laws, as only council members were allowed to speak. The two sides have been involved in a dispute over pay raises since July of 2004. A statement by the mayor said the primary reason pay raises weren't offered was because the city had a $5 million deficit. The police then hired an accounting firm to examine the city's financial statements. A day after the firm requested a copy of the city's annual report, Dyer issued a press release stating Orlando actually had a surplus of $8 million. Hoffman says the mayor is sending mixed messages.
Either you have a deficit or you have a surplus. You can't have both at the same time. So this information that the mayor has released recently is curious at best, and we continue with our investigation.
SEIU District 1199 in Wisconsin has successfully negotiated a contract with University of Wisconsin Hospitals that it believes could serve as a national model to alleviate some staffing and salary issues among nurses. SEIU says the contract eliminates mandatory overtime by 2006. Economic incentives include seniority-based across-the-board wage increases of 19% over 2 years. Kathy Anthony, an SEIU nurse at UW Hospitals in Madison, says nurses are also assured of a voice in patient care in this groundbreaking contract.
I find it very exciting, the new attitude toward nurses' input in decision-making, hospital-wide, unit-wide. It's, to me, exciting, and I think that it will go a long way in retaining nurses and overcoming the shortage of nurses.
Better staffing levels and more time with patients are two things often cited by nurses as key to keeping them in health care. The SEIU and Anthony believe this contract at University of Wisconsin Hospitals achieves gains in those areas.
Studies have shown that attractive salaries bring nurses in, but what retains nurses is that you recognize their expertise, you hear their voice when it comes to patient care decisions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. U.S. workers' hourly wages continue to decline when adjusted for inflation, and economists see no sign of a turnaround. The average growth for wages fell below 3% during the period between September 2003 and September 2004. Pay grew at 2.4%, the lowest increase on record. Economists say that part of the blame lies with soaring health benefit expenses for employers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
We know that global trade is totally out of whack for our country. We were promised that if we accepted the corporate ideology of global free trade, millions of new good-paying middle-class jobs would be created here to make all of those products that they said the USA would soon be exporting to places like China, thanks to the glorious magic of globalization. But it turned out to be globaloney. Rather than creating manufacturing jobs for workers here, the Walmarts and Nikes simply abandoned America, fleeing to places like China to make all those products. The corporate globalizers turned America from being a proud, strong manufacturing nation into a nation dependent on imports. Our global trade balance is an embarrassment. We now buy $500 billion a year more in goods from abroad than we sell in the world market. China alone pockets $18 billion a year from us, selling that much more to us than they buy from America. What most Americans don't know, however, is what China and other nations do with this excess cash that they're amassing from our trade imbalance. They've been using much of it to buy the U.S. government's bonds, putting our country deeply, perhaps dangerously, in debt to them. Indeed, the central banks of just four Asian nations, Japan, China, Taiwan, and South Korea, now hold roughly 40% of Washington's public debt. In effect, they've quietly become our world banker, giving them inordinate power over America's purse strings. On everything from the value of the American dollar to the spending policies of Congress, these four foreign banks are in a position to yank our strings, and they are. They're now demanding, for example, that Washington protect the value of their investments in U.S. bonds by cutting back on federal spending, cuts that would come from the education budget, Social Security benefits, and other spending that we Americans count on. This is Jim Hightower saying, when did we vote for this?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Show, where we believe the best of a Birkenstock sandal is for kicking neoconservative butt. That's better. Just take it, slap them upside the head with them. Works better. You know, the nice thing about Birkenstocks, when you slap a neocon upside the head with it, it kind of flexes, so acts like a blackjack, you know, adds a little power. Well, there you go. Shut up, liar. That's what Birkenstocks are for. Rama Schneider filling in for the final hour here, the Tom Hartman radio program. Glad to have you all here. Tom's apparently juiced you guys up already, so 1-866-889-8894 if you want to join in the conversation at any time. A lot of things to talk about. A lot of things. And Tom, of course, you know, even given a full 3 hours, you never have time to get through all of them, especially if you want to have a decent discussion about anything. So for this hour, I've got some odds and ends we're going to cover, and anything that you think needs to be thrown into the mix, give us that call, 886-889-8894, and let's throw it all into the mix. There's some labor news, hopefully we'll get to, some military news, Social Security stuff. What I want to start off with is something that came up when I was filling in for Tom this last Monday. And a caller, I don't remember the name or where the caller was from, but asked me what I thought would happen if the Democrats ended up with an anti-abortion, anti-choice committee chairman at the national level. And I thought about what that gentleman had said when he called up. I mean, I know what my answer was. I know what his answer. He was a gentleman who was anti-abortion, but described himself as being very much a Democratic voter, despite the abortion stance of the party. And it was kind of our disagreement on that point was, I thought if the Democratic Party takes an anti-abortion stance in any way, it's probably the kiss of death of the Democratic Party. He thought quite differently. And pointed out to a lot of people that he knows, this gentleman described himself as a evangelical Christian. And he thought quite the opposite from me. He thought that we were just basically by taking a harsh, I'll call it a pro-choice, because it's not in favor of abortion. It's not like, oh, goody, goody, ha, we get to go have abortions. It's like giving a woman the control over her body so that she can make the choice and not have the government make the choice for her. But he thought that having an anti-abortion Democratic National Committee chairperson would not be such a bad thing. As a matter of fact, he thought it'd be kind of good. And I thought about this actually for a couple of days. And the reason I'm bringing it up now is, well, you know, the race. There is actually a race for Democratic National Committee chairperson, which is not something that's had to happen, because traditionally, if you have a president who wins, everybody goes gaga over that president, whether it's Democrat or Republican, and bows down to whatever choice of committee chairperson the president, the successful presidential candidate, wanted. I am not a fair person to talk about the Democratic Party for a couple reasons. The biggest being that I am not a Democrat. I do occasionally vote Democratic, primarily at local levels. I voted for Clinton the first time and regret it. Well, I didn't totally regret it, but I did have some regrets. But no, overall, I wish I had voted for Ross Perot, but for some very specific reasons, having nothing to do with sex in the Oval Office. I did vote for Kerry this time around, and that's a vote I thoroughly regret. I did. I'm not going to kick myself in the butt for it, but I did. I voted for Kerry. I'm not that happy. What brought this up to mind is reading, Dean seeking the Democratic chair. But last night, I had to take a client for a job I do. I can't go into too much detail because I'd probably run up against all sorts of HIPAA law violations. But I was taking a client down to a hospital appointment and coming back up, driving up the interstate in Vermont. It was about 6 o'clock in the evening or so. So it's dark. And the reason I bring that up is I was able to tune into WOR out of New York City. We get actually pretty good coverage from the New York City radio stations if you want to listen to them, which I sometimes do if I'm on the road, because AM waves do a nice job of bouncing and staying down by the surface of the earth and carry quite a ways. And I actually happened to tune in to Michael Savage. Now, in all fairness to myself, I didn't realize at first who I was listening to, especially because of the content of his opening rant. And Michael Savage, of course, is the thoroughly despicable, obnoxious host of the Savage Nation. But he's entitled to his point of views, I guess. But Michael Savage was just tearing in to George Bush. And I mean, he was really just verbally tearing into him. And the cause of Savage's ire was the $50 million for the coronation coming up in, what, about a week now? His complaint being that it fed the caricature, the stereotype of the Republican Party being the rich, white, we don't give a damn about anybody else because we already got ours crowd. And he said that having this coronation, he used the word inauguration. I think coronation's more apt and honest description of it. But he talked about, to him, this $50 million coronation just fed that caricature of what the Republican Party is. I don't think it may be a caricature, but it's a very, I think, realistic one. But that's my own opinion. And shortly after that, I couldn't stand anymore, and I ended up turning off to something else. But it made me think. Gosh, I am sorry Michael Savage made me think, but he did. It made me think. I saw the same basic idea in the Democratic semi-protest of Ohio's electoral votes. This concept that we were shown, the Democratic Party got out there and showed this unified front of this caricature of a bunch of whiny liberals. Do you remember how they protested the Ohio electoral votes? What is that, just a short week ago? They all stood up and said, oh, we don't really think there was anything wrong with the vote. And, yeah, we think George Bush won, but what? We don't think the vote really went fair. And they proceeded to say their argument really wouldn't change anything, but they think there were issues with the voting in Ohio. I personally, for one, happen to think that there were so many issues of such depth that, yeah, the outcome of the vote in Ohio could have been changed if all of the pre-election, during election, and post-election voter suppression, fraud, etc., had been avoided. The outcome in Ohio very well could have been different. But that's the caricature that the public is being fed by the Democratic Party of this whiny bunch of liberals that don't have any ideas. Have no ideas. All they can do is, oh, they can just complain. Complain that people want to do things about Social Security, but what are you going to do? They complain about the war in Iraq, but they all voted for it. Well, most of them did. They complain about the taxes, but what do they have to do? They don't come up with any ideas. You go through the whole litany. This is what you get fed. Now, in some cases, I think it's well-deserved, the criticism. In other cases, I don't think it is. But you have this caricature of the Democratic Party as being a bunch of whiny liberals. As we go along in this last hour, I guess that leads me to a couple questions I have. Is that a fair caricature of the Democratic Party? And if so, what can be done to change that? Not just in PR, but in action. PR doesn't change anything. It just makes something maybe appear a little different if you don't look at it closely. I'm talking about really changing something. And a bigger question is, with the Democratic Party coming up, and I ask this of Democrats because I'm an unfair one to come out. I'm not a Democrat. What are they looking for? What are Democrats looking for in a chairman? What is it that the Democrats expect at the national level from the person who essentially is going to handle a very, very politically important position? It's going to be the person that draws the whole Democratic Party together at the national level. It's going to be the person that handles the finances, the person that defines the message. There is no sitting Democratic president to do this. Bill Clinton, like him or not, doesn't matter. As a sitting president, he was able to define the Democratic message. He was a sitting president. You can't argue with success, right? Well, you can, but it's hard arguing with success. So over the last several days, I've been wondering, what is it? If you're a liberal, especially if you're a Democrat, what is it that you want out of the national level? What is it that you expect to do? How do you get out from under the stereotype of the whiny liberal? Governor Dean of Vermont has announced his intention. He's made it official now. He's announced his intention to throw his hat in the ring for the Democratic chairmanship at the national level. And we really have to keep, I keep saying at the national level, because oftentimes there are differences between state and national parties. So I keep emphasizing at the national level. So Howard Dean, Simon Rosenberg, who's he? Well, he's being endorsed by Joe Trippi, Mr. Romer, ex-congressman, Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Veronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman, our radio show. Rana Schneider sitting in for Tom. Want to know a little bit about me more? Just go to GRRradio.com. That's GRRradio.com. Enough self-promotion. Because I am lucky enough to be able to fill in for an absolutely brilliant individual who I have a ton of respect for. The chat room, if you really want to go find out where there is such a collection of absolute, I mean, these are got to be the most intelligent people anywhere, ever, throughout the universe, in the Tom Hartman chat room. You just go to TomHartman.com and follow the links to chat room. And, hey, guess where it takes you? It takes you to the chat room. Where liberals and progressives, we don't lie. That's one thing I do like about liberals. I may disagree with liberals, but they're honest. Conservatives just lie. Liberals, I find objectionable in some of their policies. I'm a progressive libertarian type of guy, but cons lie, liberals tell the truth. The chat room, though, the reason I mention it, their basic answer to what I asked is, well, what do you expect out of the Democratic Party? They're pretty unanimous. The answer was, we want somebody who'll stick up for us. 866-889-8894. You're on the Tom Hartman Show, Preston from Denver, Colorado. How you doing?
Hi, Rama. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Great.
I noticed that the former mayor of Denver, Wellington Webb, is also looking to head the Democratic Party. And he was caricatured in many ways by the Republican noise machine here,
yeah,
which had the advantage of a 50,000-watt station occupied by, you know, one right-wing corporate strategist, another right-wing lawyer, and another right-winger from a think tank here.
It's just what Tom was talking about in the previous hour, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, but he still accomplished a lot. It didn't get reported a lot, but, you know, he supported teachers. He helped to create new library to a African-American community here, and a number of things like that.
Good for him.
So I think it's going to take, you know, for more Democratic leaders to stand up, I think it's going to take more Democrats standing up, you know, people writing letters to the editors, you know, kind of parroting what, you know, the committees of correspondence did during our revolutionary period.
Right.
And people not allowing themselves to be cowed by right-wing radio hosts as well. I mean, as repulsive as those shows can be at times, they oftentimes will take calls of dissent. Michael Savage usually avoids them. And his job, I don't think he believes what he's saying. I think what he's doing is dehumanizing people in other countries, you know, for the sake of the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's really awful stuff.
That's where I turned it off. Wow. You still there?
Yes, I am.
Wow. that was scary.
Yeah. But earlier in the program, people were wondering about a liberal TV network. And that would be great if some rich benefactor made that happen. But I do want to mention that there already is something called Free Speech TV.
Yes.
Yeah, freespeech.org. And if people have the Dish Network,
yep,
they can get it.
And they put on some really it seems like you're starting to watch some real off-the-wall programming, but they have these people go out and do these small independent pieces, the different bits of journalistic pieces, and they are really good. They bring you the voice of the people right into your room, and literally the people.
Yeah, they do. I don't have Dish Network, but they do air also on, like, community access stations in 28 states, and sometimes I catch it there. They
right.
broadcast Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, and who knows, maybe they'll do an hour or two of Tom's program sometime.
Well, Preston, before we get up to the break here, do you call yourself a Democrat? Don't be shy.
Yeah, in moments, certainly I'm mostly sympathetic to the Democrats, but you know, what the Greens are doing. I'm very sympathetic to what the Greens are doing. And even, you know, dirty words like socialism, I'm sympathetic to as well.
Oh, my gosh. I think we're just going to get a bunch of calls to the FCC over that. All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Preston. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. We shall return.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 100 Orlando police officers held a silent vigil outside of City Hall on Monday as the mayor held a workshop to discuss their salaries inside. Fraternal Order of Police Labor Committee Chairman Sam Hoffman says that the workshop held by Mayor John Dyer was in violation of labor laws, as only council members were allowed to speak. The two sides have been involved in a dispute over pay raises since July of 2004. A statement by the mayor said the primary reason pay raises weren't offered was because the city had a $5 million deficit. The police then hired an accounting firm to examine the city's financial statements. A day after the firm requested a copy of the city's annual report, Dyer issued a press release stating Orlando actually had a surplus of $8 million. Hoffman says the mayor is sending mixed messages.
Either you have a deficit
or you have a surplus. You can't have both at the same time. So this information that the mayor has released recently is curious at best, and we continue with our investigation.
SEIU District 1199, Wisconsin, has successfully negotiated a contract with University of Wisconsin Hospitals that it believes could serve as a national model to alleviate some staffing and salary issues among nurses. SEIU says the contract eliminates mandatory overtime by 2006. Economic incentives include seniority-based across-the-board wage increases of 19% over 2 years. Kathy Anthony, an SEIU nurse at UW Hospitals in Madison, says nurses are also assured of a voice in patient care in this groundbreaking contract.
I find it very exciting, the new attitude toward nurses' input in decision-making, hospital-wide, unit-wide. It's, to me, exciting, and I think that it will go a long way in retaining nurses and overcoming the shortage of nurses.
Better staffing levels and more time with patients are two things often cited by nurses as key to keeping them in health care. The SEIU and Anthony believe this contract at University of Wisconsin Hospitals achieves gains in those areas.
Studies have shown that attractive salaries bring nurses in, but what retains nurses is that you recognize their expertise, you hear their voice when it comes to patient care decisions.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. U.S. workers' hourly wages continue to decline when adjusted for inflation, and economists see no sign of a turnaround. The average growth for wages fell below 3% during the period between September 2003 and September 2004. Pay grew at 2.4%, the lowest increase on record. Economists say that part of the blame lies with soaring health benefit expenses for employers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. I'm Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman this final hour. 866-889-8894 if you want to join in on the festivities here. If you want to play on the Tom Hartman show, feel free to dial in. Only if you're single, DemocraticMatch.com. Your politics do say a lot about you. They are a premium featured dating site where Democrats and other progressive thinkers can find a partner who shares your worldviews. We have thousands of liberal members waiting to meet you. Don't forget about SmallDog.com, Small Dog Electronics, high technology for low prices, 1-800-511-MAX. And the EcoWine, EcoWine.com, 888-326-9463. Stop by, visit those sponsors by all means. Okay, it's already scrawled off, but somebody in the chat room typed in that they like what the Greens say, but they think before the Greens are viable, you need to have instant runoff voting, preferential voting, however you want to phrase it. My simple question to a statement like that is how much of a winner has the Democratic Party as it's become? How much of a winner has it been? I'm not too sure that they've been a winner at all. Well, anyway, back to the phones, 886-889-8894. You're on the Tom Hartman Show. Lynn from Eureka, California. Hi.
Hi. You ask about who I would want to be the Democratic chairman.
Yes, sir.
Actually, I do call myself a Democrat, but like you, I'm beginning to say it less and less. I'm starting to back away from that. I do like the Greens.
Yeah.
My idea of an ideal Democratic chairman would be Dennis Kucinich. I agree with almost everything he says. In fact, when he was running, I couldn't find anything I didn't agree with.
Yes.
But as far as the two that are running, I don't know enough about either one.
Well, there's actually several, and I don't have the full list. I grabbed this L.A. Times article that talks about Howard Dean. There's also Simon Rosenberg, who is, Joe Trippi is endorsing Simon Rosenberg, and I'm not sure who Simon Rosenberg is. In all honesty, it's the first time. And according to Preston from Denver, that Mr. Webb, did he say he was the Denver mayor, I believe it was, or one of those
something
mayors?
Like that.
Yeah, is running. There's a handful of people that are out there reaching out. What would be the primary attribute you would look for in a national political party chairman or chairwoman?
Well, I think that we have to start working for the working man and the poor. That's my idea of what the Democratic Party should be doing.
Okay. Do you talk to anybody about that in the Democratic Party?
Oh, yeah. And you were talking about we should contact our media. I have a big phone bill. I'm calling the media all the time, national and local and so forth.
Hey, that's the way to do it. You need to get heard. It's a simple fact. I'd learned how to argue growing up. It was originally a pretty big family of five kids, but two of them, as I was the youngest, two of them had moved out while I spent most of my growing up years with just my two older brothers. But I learned something about arguing, Lynn, and this was, in my family, you had to be factually correct. You had to be able to speak eloquently, well, knowledgeably and somewhat eloquently. You needed to be able to put your point across in words. But there was a third thing that was a requirement in order to have any chance of winning any debate or argument in our household. You had to be loud. Had to be. And people forget about that. If you very quietly sit in a corner and you kind of whisper your argument, nobody hears it. No. But if you stand there in the middle of the room and you yell at everybody, they hear it.
Yeah, and that's why the Republican noise machine has been so effective.
That's why you contacting the media will be effective. If just you by yourself, it wouldn't. But you, with folks like me and every other Tom, Dick, and Harry writing letters, calling talk shows, and encouraging the local media outlets to have on people like Tom or Air America or whoever it is that you happen to like, we make a difference, and people hear it, but only when the volume's turned up, because you're competing against some very busy lives for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Lynn.
All makes sense.
Yep.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, and I appreciate the input. Where to go for leader? That's the problem, is looking around for leadership. It's probably biggest part of the Democrats' problem is there has not been any really good leadership provided for quite a while in the Democratic Party, in my opinion. I think at the national level, there is at state levels, you'll find that local races, apparently Democrats did pretty good, especially the more progressive Democrats. I don't have the stuff in front of me, but they didn't do too bad. Other items in the news, this comes out of my local paper, the Barry Montpelier Times Argus, measures its circulation in the several tens of thousands. You know, this is Vermont, you know, major metropolitan area has 5,000 people in it, so excuse us. But the headline of the article is Vermont leaders voice concern over extending length of guard active duty. Now, remember, we have a Republican governor, and we also now have a very, very Democratic House of Representatives and Democratic Senate in the state of Vermont. But our very Republican governor, well, I don't even want to call him very Republican because he's not your normal run-of-the-mill Texas Republican anyway, has joined forces with Major General Martha Rainville. Major General Martha Rainville is the Vermont National Guard's head. They're actually in Vermont now, in various states it works in different ways, but in Vermont the legislature picks who to head up the National Guard. And I remember when she first went at it with this one gentleman, I can't remember his name now, who had been in there for quite a while, and it was quite an argument in the legislature over whether or not they should take a then Lieutenant Colonel Martha Rainville. She was in the Air National Guard here in Vermont. And now she, you know, by virtue of the legislature, she becomes Major General. Pretty good promotion. Anyway, Major General Martha Rainville and Governor James Douglas are speaking out against a proposal to extend the length of Guard active duty. Governor Douglas says, quote, "It is entirely inappropriate for the Army to eliminate or in any way increase the two-year limitation on Guard and Reserve mobilization." Martha Rainville, General, Major General Martha Rainville, said, she says it could hurt recruitment and change the Guard from a part-time to full-time force. Well, no kidding. If they're constantly called up for active duty 12 months out of the year, every year, that starts to sound a lot like active duty. I think this would create a situation that we'd want to avoid, and that's a situation where the Guard and Guard members could be used indefinitely, Rainville said, and it would obviously have an impact on recruitment and retention here and across the country. What's important about this is General Rainville is a member of the Reserve Forces Policy Board, which advises the Secretary of Defense on issues affecting the Guard and Reserve. And she is expected to travel to Washington for meetings at the Pentagon and Congress, I guess, next week. It says Tuesday. I believe they're referring to Tuesday next week. Do we have a grassroots revolution coming against this war, this eternal war, wherever Georgie Porgy Pudding and Pie and all his folks with lies in their eyes want to take us into? The U.S. Army Reserve tapped heavily to provide soldiers for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, here's something I'm going to stop doing when I read little bits out of these articles. This is a Boston News, Boston.com. Which one is it? It's the Boston, not the Boston Herald. It's the other one. You notice they say the U.S. Army Reserve tapped heavily to provide soldiers for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's BS, ladies and gentlemen. That is not true. Anybody that says the National Guard and the Reserves have been tapped for Afghanistan and Iraq are BSing you. That's right. The only reason that we're diving into the Reserves and the National Guard so heavily is because of Iraq. It's not because of Afghanistan. If George Bush had actually done his job and focused on the people who attacked us, assuming he didn't want to actually go into Saudi Arabia, but instead wanted to chase down just their minions in Afghanistan, 30 to 50,000 would be doing fine in Afghanistan if that's what they had to do. And I don't want to, you know, I'm not debating whether or not we should have even been in Afghanistan. That's another story. But the only reason they are calling up all of these reserves and National Guard is for Iraq. We are now up to, what, about 150,000 troops on the ground in Iraq. Still not as many as the insurgents, according to Iraq's intelligence chief. He suggests that by the time you get through their active insurgents and supporters, you're around 200,000. So we're still outnumbered there. But the U.S. Army Reserve tapped heavily to provide soldiers for war in Iraq is degenerating into a broken force due to dysfunctional military policies, the Army Reserves chief said in a memo made public last Wednesday. I do not wish to sound alarmist. I do wish to send a clear, distinctive signal of deepening concern, Lieutenant James Henley said in a December 20 memo to Army Chief of Staff General Peter Shoemaker. The Army Reserve consists of about 200,000 supposedly part-time soldiers who, for various reasons, are in the reserve. Ugh. About 52,000 Army Reserve soldiers are on active duty, 17,000 in Iraq, 2,000 in Afghanistan. It's not those 2,000 in Afghanistan that are putting strains on the U.S. Army Reserve. It's this absolutely bogus war in Iraq that's putting the strain on the reserves. But that's okay, because Army leaders are considering seeking a change in the Pentagon policy that would allow for longer and more frequent call-ups of some reservists to meet the demands. Once again, now this is a Washington Post story. They say to meet the demands of conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's BS. If you eliminate Iraq from that statement, there would be no need for these extended call-ups. There would be no need to put this drain on the United States National Guard. There would be absolutely no need at all. But it's the demands of the conflict in Iraq that are putting the strains on the reserve and the National Guard. It's the conflict in Iraq that is causing the problem. Now, once again, I'm fully cognizant of the fact that we could argue the necessity of being in Afghanistan. I personally think it was probably, I'm perfectly willing to say that it was the right thing to do. But we, you know, people can argue with that. But certainly, I mean, nobody who has not drank the Bush Kool-Aid can argue that we needed to go into Iraq. So are we starting to see, though, a bit of grassroots uprising against this constant war? Are people finally starting to feel the wear and the tear? You start hearing, when I in Vermont, I start hearing Jim Douglas, who very proudly stood up for this president, who incidentally, the same president's administration, he's suing over a couple of environmental issues. He's suing, that's right, a Republican governor is suing the Bush administration over acid rain emissions from power plants. Our Republican governor is suing the Bush administration because the Bush administration doesn't want to allow Vermonters to get their medical drugs from Canada. But still, Governor Douglas got out there and so proudly championed the cause of George W. Bush here in Vermont. A man who he's not only got to sue over social issues, but now he's got to sit there and say, "You are raping our military, Mr. Bush. You are taking the National Guard and destroying it." People join the National Guard for very different reasons than they join the reserves. The reserves you expect to be called out to active duty at some point. That's what the reserves is for. The National Guard, that's the militia. The National Guard is the militia. People join to do things in their home state or to protect the borders. To protect the borders of the United States of America. Are we finally starting to see a little upswelling of resistance from everybody? Maybe. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An amateur scientist chases snowflakes and creates captivating photographs. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Pat Belling likes winter, but it's not skiing or ice fishing that makes her heart beat faster. Belling works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, and for the past 23 years, she's spent her winter free time photographing snowflakes. Most snowflake photographers take their pictures outside to capture the flakes before they melt, but Belling found she could spread an acrylic sealant on a microscope slide and capture the imprint of any flake that landed on it. Armed with a cold cookie sheet of these resin-coated slides, Belling waits for snow.
And it has to be a perfect snow. There are years I can't get any because it's too wet here, or it's too heavy, it's too windy. It's got to be that perfect snow when you go out and you put your arms out and you see the individual flakes. And then it has to land perfectly, because if it lands on an angle, it crumbles. Or if something else hits it, another snowflake, it's not going to be a perfect catch. So the first time I got it, I got one of these really complex ones. It was like finding a diamond.
Belling then brings the slides indoors, waits hours for the tiny imprints to dry, and counts her catch using a microscope attached to a camera. She says capturing even a piece of a snowflake is exciting, and she gladly teaches her technique to others.
When you have something so natural, so beautiful, you need to share it. It's sort of like that AdWords, this costs this much, but this is priceless. I've had people come back at shows the next year and say to me, you know, I don't look at snow in the same way since I've met you. It's really rewarding. And kids will say, you mean that's what it looks like when I eat it?
Belling's photographs are currently on display at the Mosquito Hill Nature Center in New London, Wisconsin. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman, a radio show, the home of reality-based radio. Yeah, we don't need to fudge things. No way. All we need to do is tell the truth, and sooner or later, Love is going to get you, and people will hear the right way. A USA Today CNN Gallup poll taken Friday through Sunday found that most young voters support private accounts, even if it means cuts to guaranteed benefits by 55% to 42%. Those under 30 call it a good idea. But the older the voter, the stronger the opposition. By 63 to 33%, those over 50 call it a bad idea. Now, I didn't look at all the polls, so I'm not sure. Oh, here we go. 30 to 49, 57% think this phony privatization scheme is a good idea. Oh, no, that's not what it says at all. Let me read this here. Nearly two-thirds of those under 30 years old say they don't think Social Security will be able to pay them any benefit when they stop working. A 57% majority of those who are 30 to 49 years old agree. But by 62 to 33%, those 50 to 64 years old say that Social Security checks will be in the mail when they retire. Herein is the crux of the argument. What the Republicans have managed to do with the Social Security debate, they have managed to make it look like Social Security is so screwed up it just won't be there, so why do you want to support it? Look at that. They're just going to make you pay taxes. It ain't going to be there. You know what? That's BS. And we need to start saying that's BS, and we need to say, look, they're telling you they have a big red rubber ball in their hand, but look at their hand. That's not a big red rubber ball. That's a computer printer or something. They're lying to you. The truth is, Social Security, if the tax structure isn't changed at all, will still take in more than it pays out up until 2018. From 2018 to 2048 or up into the 2050s, depending on who you listen to, CBO or Social Security Administration, there's going to do fine. It's going to be using interest that it's earned. Social Security is going to be around and paying full benefits if we don't let the cons screw us out of it. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. You all have a really great day. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.